You pray with me. Gracious God, in this place, in this time, we invite your Spirit to open our ears and our hearts to hear the words that you have for us today. Pray that my words will be faithful to you. Amen. So I got glasses for the first time when I was in sixth grade. Being the most studious of students, I liked to sit toward the back of the classroom. And, you know, by sixth grade, we were allowed to begin choosing our own seats. So I chose a seat all the way in the back. That is the same year that I came to understand that I was seeing the world differently. I don't entirely remember how I came to realize this, but I couldn't see the board clearly. I do remember thinking that it was weird that nobody else mentioned the blurry board. I had wrongly assumed that the way I saw it was how everyone else saw it. I thought the world was blurry around the edges for everyone. At least I didn't realize that I was seeing the world blurry. Now, at some point, it was mentioned to my parents, and my teacher moved me to the front of the classroom, and I still couldn't see. And somehow that led to an optometrist appointment and a prescription for glasses. I do remember one thing very distinctly, though. All of this happened, and then I got the glasses. I put them on, and I remember the car ride. I remember the car ride home very distinctly because I remember looking out the window at all of the trees and the leaves, and this is South Georgia, so pine needles. And I could see detail in a way that maybe I hadn't seen for a long while. My world was changed by those lenses that brought everything into a new focus. To this day, when I take out my contacts and I see that blurry world, I marvel at how I ever thought that was the way the world actually was. The way we see the world shapes us. It shapes our opinions and our experiences. It's part of why two people viewing the same incident can come away with drastically different experiences. Our own personal beliefs can play a huge role in this. Some might call this bias. And to be clear here, bias does not always have to be necessarily a bad thing, though it certainly can be. Take religious views, for example. Because of what I believe about God and race, I promise you I will see things just a little bit different than how some of our other Christians see things. And we all claim the same faith. And viewing the world through that lens is a bit of a bias. That's my bias towards how I understand and see the world. And that's kind of what's happening today in our Luke text. That has Jesus in a conversation with a group of Sadducees. The whole conversation is a lot of viewing the world and putting on glasses. Jesus is giving them a new lens that they hadn't ever considered as possible. Now I want to step back for a moment and explain a little bit about what the lens of the Sadducees is. We're not going to dive too deep in here, so just bear with me here. The Sadducees were using a lens and that were using one lens and how they understood, Sadducees were using, because we need to understand first the lens of the Sadducees were using, and how they understood what Jesus had been teaching. If I actually read this sentence, it makes way more sense. All right, we're going to start that over. I want to step back for a moment because we need to understand first the lens that the Sadducees were using, and how they understood Jesus had been teaching. For one, many times when we see individuals challenging Jesus, and this happens quite a bit throughout the Gospels, there's a certain motivation behind their challenging Jesus. One, to undercut and oftentimes ultimately to trick Jesus into saying something they can use against him. And just for example, if you turn into the passage just immediately before this, that's exactly what the Pharisees are trying. But Jesus, you know, he kind of schools them a little bit, and then they move on, and this Sadducees moves in. And so that doesn't seem to be quite the case here. The Sadducees here are actually not bad guys. in the way we might sometimes see the Pharisees portrayed. What I see is a group that thought they had found a hole in Jesus' teachings, and so they wanted to engage him in some verbal sparring. It would not have been uncommon in those days, especially if you had conflicting theologies, to be challenging another teacher, especially if you were certain that you were right. And so they wanted to engage in this bit of verbal sparring, a bit of, you know, one-upping, if you will. And so I invite you to keep that in mind as we think about these Sadducees who came up, because it meant that they were, in fact, listening to Jesus and wanted to engage him and not just dismiss him. They weren't just looking to get rid of him, but they actually wanted to engage in a philosophical discussion about what they believed. Now, the second thing to remember here is goes more to the question. They asked specifically about resurrection. Now, again, I'm not going to dive too deep into this, but there were a number of streams of Jewish thought in that day, the Sadducees being one of them. And one of the things that set them apart from some of the others is they stuck strictly to the Torah, the first five books of what we call the Old Testament. And they also did not believe in the resurrection or afterlife. They understood life to be simply the years that we have, and when we die, we return to the dust from which we came. Now, Jesus had been teaching about the resurrection, something they didn't believe in. So as they posed this question about marrying and husbands and who would be the husband in the resurrection, they are framing this from the perspective that without an afterlife, resurrection must be a bodily resurrection, and that the New Jerusalem would be a literal new city, and that it would all take place just like as you and I are living right now. That's how they were envisioning when they talked about resurrection, was that there's nothing after this, so it must be in this world that we live in. That's, by the way, a stream of thought that was debated even into early Christianity, and in some circles is still debated today whether it would be a bodily resurrection or not. But that's a whole other sermon. Here they're asking this hypothetical question grounded in the law of Moses that is, in their beliefs, creating a little bit of a mess for Jesus. Who counts here as the husband? One wife, seven husbands, no children, all done in the proper way according to the rules of Moses. According to the rules that Moses had given them for the protection of women in a time when women needed it, not because there was anything in themselves that was deficient, but because of the harm that could come to women because of a very patriarchal society for them. This woman, these husbands of hers, they all acted in accordance to the law. Who will be her husband in the resurrection? Which one? Her favorite? The first? The last? Jesus, we've got a big hole here for you. And Jesus responds, as Jesus often does, first with a more practical answer. Look, you're misunderstanding what the resurrection is. In the age to come, it's so much more than what we know here. And it's so much more than the lives we're living now. Those things are not going to be, those things that are important to us here, the marrying and giving in marriage, those things aren't going to be as important in the world to come. In fact, what's going to come with the resurrection is so much beyond you, you can't even really comprehend. This is something that is the things of angels and of God and the glories of heaven. It just really is beyond our comprehension. Then Jesus gives them the answer. Jesus being Jesus gives them the answer that shapes how they understand his first part of his answer. He gives them a new lens with which to view this question. They believed in the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Their great leader Moses, who had written down the books that they considered the most holy books, had spoken of those dead in a way that described them not as gone, but existing in a new way. Moses spoke of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in a way that said they were not God. Now, if you believe that Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, the forefathers of the faith, were not God, but are currents, if you believe that, doesn't that mean there must be something more? Doesn't your own beliefs say there must be more to this than you currently know or understand? Now, we can debate on whether that would be convincing to us. What we know the text tells us is that it was for these Sadducees. That suddenly this framing of this question, this question that they had come up with, this way they framed it, Jesus reframed it. And they suddenly understood a new way. Because they said Jesus had spoken well. They compliment him. Say, Jesus, you have spoken well. And they went away, not daring to ask another question. Because, you know, part one of upsmanship is that, you know, you got to be right. Or, you know, you can't really one up. You have to walk away. So they walked away in this moment, realizing that this perfect question that they had given Jesus, maybe there was another way to look at it. Now, in my head, the way this all happened was that this group was nearby Jesus. They heard the questioning from the Pharisees, and they heard Jesus answering, and they were standing over there in the corner, like, hey, that's Jesus, right? Jesus of Nazareth? Oh, yeah. He's the one who's been teaching about that resurrection. He's been saying some crazy things. I think we need to ask him a question. So they plotted and planned this, and they had smirks on their face, and they came up with this perfect question, and they're going to trip up Jesus because they're like, yes, we have him. We figured out the magic question. He has all the answers. You bet we have one that he doesn't. And then Jesus throws them something they had not thought of. Only to be surprised when Jesus could answer their question. And not only answer the question, but could challenge their own beliefs, their framework of the way they viewed their lives and their faith life, and imagine they walked away slowly, but also a bit deep in thought. And all of this happens because Jesus offered them a different lens to look through. He invited them to look out and see things in a different way. A way that allows us to ask the same question, but find a new and deeper meaning in it. Now, what I find particularly interesting about this is that the view of many, that many have of Christianity, is anyone that's rightly earned, sadly, is one of people who are accusational, like to condemn others, tell others how they're wrong. But what we have here in Jesus, these Sadducees came up and they basically said, Jesus, we've got the trick question, and Jesus said, it's not quite right. But does Jesus say to them, you're wrong. You don't understand anything. What are you thinking? You are terrible people and you should never challenge me. Could Jesus have done that? Well, of course. But does Jesus do that? No, because Jesus doesn't need to condemn people. Jesus' interest isn't in condemnation of others or even accusing. Not even necessarily interested in saying directly that people are wrong. Instead, Jesus wants to use this moment to do what Jesus does best, to teach, to offer this new perspective. To continue my metaphor, to offer them a new lens. Jesus isn't looking for right or wrong. Jesus is trying to open their minds to new perspectives, expand their thinking. That's what Jesus was doing all throughout his ministry. When you travel around to all of these different places, Jesus was trying to open the people to see the world he saw, to know the God he knew, and the love that God has for us. Now, if I'm being honest, which I try to do when I preach, I try to do always, but especially when I preach, I can imagine being one of those Sadducees, sheepishly walking away. I can also admit I don't like to be wrong. I almost was a lawyer in college. Then I didn't go to law school, so that's a whole other story. I wanted to be a lawyer partly because I loved to argue and prove, even when I knew I was wrong, that I was right. That's how much I don't like to be wrong. I mean, fairness, who likes to be wrong? But to consider another point of view, to really open ourselves up, we have to be at least willing to admit that we might be wrong. Now, it doesn't mean that we are wrong. That's an important distinction. You can admit that I could be wrong, even while holding strongly to the belief that you are not wrong. Those things don't have to be, like I said, it shouldn't. Those two things can be together at the same time. And sometimes that's really hard. To open yourselves up and say, I might be wrong. I need to think about this for a second, and I could be wrong. Sometimes life makes it really hard. We all have life experiences that jade us, or trigger us, or just cause us to shut down, and sometimes those can shut down our openness to others' perspectives, to walking in another's shoes, to understanding another's worldview. And when we do that, we're shutting down our ability to use the new lens. Much like if I put on those glasses and just closed my eyes. Many of you know parts of my story. If you don't, you can ask me about this after this. I'm telling you lots of things you can ask me about afterwards. It's not intentional. I mean, feel free, I always love questions. Many of you know my story and how I came to be a pastor and how I came to be in this place. And even since I've been in this place, my ups and downs and struggles that I've had in the church. Wrestling that I've had with my faith and my faith background. And I'll be honest, I carry some scars from the journey. Some real scars that are deep and not so deep, actually. And again, if I'm being honest, that sometimes affects how I see the world, especially the church. This might be surprising as a pastor, but I'm sometimes suspicious. At least certain parts of it. Specifically, for example, if you are from southern Georgia, here's from southern Georgia, I apologize. I'm letting you know now, this is a struggle that I have. If you're from southern Georgia, which is where I grew up, I'm probably going to be a bit suspicious of you if you tell me you're a church person. Because I know the church. Church, well, it did a lot to hurt me. And so oftentimes my reaction is I want to find out what your background is because I need to know how you feel about certain things because if I can figure out how you feel about certain things, I can probably figure out if you fit my narrative of who you may or may not be. And that's one of the ways that I put a block to the lens of seeing and understanding others because I've noticed sometimes I do this. I draw conclusions about folks when I meet them and then realize that was really wrong. My initial reaction wasn't right. I was closing myself. Now, I also want to give a little caveat to that because sometimes it is important to protect you. There are times in our lives where we are not ready to let those walls down, times when those wounds are still too fresh to open ourselves up. And so sometimes we need those to protect us, to keep out those who are intentionally or maybe even unintentionally might harm us, who might dredge up those old hurts that lie not far beneath the surface. Sometimes that can be really important because self-care is also very important. Sometimes we need to protect ourselves and care for our needs before we really wade into that murky water. Because when you open yourself up like this, you're making yourself vulnerable. This is something you really have to be willing for. Because if you're not, you might end up doing the opposite. Rather opening yourself up to maybe understanding a new perspective, you might find yourself withdrawing even further. So why does all this matter to you? Why am I sharing this as a sermon, other than the obvious that Jesus did it, so we should all? Well, in the UMC, we have this concept we call the journey toward perfection. It's not that that we believe that we can be perfect. The good Lord knows that I am certainly not. It's about the idea that we can build a life based on our faith that continually moves us toward perfection. That our faith is inviting us to take our lives and dedicate them to being as much of who Christ has invited us to be that we can. It's not that we never mess up. It's not that we never sin. But that when we do, we keep moving forward and trying to do better. That we're opening ourselves up to learning, because our faith does require us to learn and to grow and to change. And sometimes learning means learning from others, understanding the perspective of others. Because sometimes we need our views challenged and changed, because we don't always know the weak spots in our own beliefs or the places where we built our own walls. Also, because sometimes understanding someone else's perspective doesn't change anything about what you believe, but it helps you understand more deeply what you believe. All this learning is a process, and it all helps us to be more of who God created. It helps us to love God, to love others, and to love ourselves more. Jesus, even tonight, is asking us to consider, what have I been so certain of? Where can I be more open? Where do I need to be challenged? Jesus is inviting us to consider, not demanding, not condemning us to hell if we don't, but inviting us to take a moment and pick up a new pair of glasses and see the world, to see God, to see others, to see ourselves in new ways, and to allow that new lens to deepen our understanding of ourselves and to deepen our faith. Tonight I'm asking you to do this. Where do you need to consider?